Hello and welcome. You are listening to podcast one for the lecture on knowledge representation. Our agenda today is shown on slide two. We will look deeper into the representation of conceptual knowledge. We look a little bit into the history of knowledge representation and how modern description logics were developed, starting from ideas around so-called frames and semantic nets. Then we look a little bit deeper into the description logic ALC, and we discuss the representation of so-called A boxes and T boxes, and we discuss reasoning procedures and also briefly look at the complexity of these procedures. In the second lecture on knowledge representation, we will look deeper into non-monotonic reasoning, and we will also finally look into web ontologies and the OWL standard. Recommended reading is summarized on slide 3. Much of the material that we deal with can be found in chapter 12, but the treatment of the material is more informal. Therefore, on slide 4, you see a summary of additional reading materials, which gives you direct access to literature on knowledge representation and description logic. So let's look a little deeper into the representation of conceptual knowledge. Concepts help us to describe our perception of a certain domain or area of the world at a rather abstract level, combining it but also with concrete objects and instances. So on slide 6, you see a conceptual model that I have in some way in my head for this lecture. So we looked at various concepts that are used in artificial intelligence. For example, we looked at intelligent agents. Agents want to find the best possible action. And to do this, for example, they use state-based search algorithms that can find such best possible actions. Agents also need a model of the world. In such a model, we need to have a rich representation of objects. And for example, in this lecture, we look into how we can represent information about objects. Models can be improved by learning. Clause learning is, for example, a form of learning. And Davis-Putnam-Loschmann-Loveland algorithm can be improved by adding clause learning to it. We've also talked about a calculus and saw resolution as a type of calculus. We discussed mathematical logic, which requires calculi to implement reasoning. And so you can imagine to take such a conceptual network and add more and more concepts and relations to it. Such a representation is usually underlying so-called symbolic representations. So in the introduction to this lecture, we talked a little bit about symbolic and subsymbolic representations and the historic background of these terms. And we also looked at the example of a chair. So we tried to find some properties and definitions for what is a chair. So we could, for example, characterize a chair as a portable object that has a surface that is suitable for sitting and another surface against we can lean. Of course, we all know that such a description would not be perfect, as there are many different types of chairs. And this is, of course, a challenge. How can we find good definitions that allow agents to perform successful reasoning? And we want to find a definition using symbols, concepts, rules, some formalism, and then also automate the reasoning procedures. We've seen some examples using propositional and predicate logic, and now we'll actually look at the logic that sits in between these two formalisms. At the bottom of slide 7, you also see an extract of the original Dartmouth conference proposal, which started the field of AI, and you can see that to form abstractions and concepts was one of the very early goals right from the beginning of artificial intelligence research. So slide 8 discusses knowledge representation and the types of reasoning that we would like to do with the represented knowledge. So an agent needs quite some knowledge before it can start to act intelligently. In particular, it should know the relevant objects in a domain, it should know what properties objects have and how they relate to each other. We distinguish between abstract concepts such as car or book, and then more concrete instances of these concepts, for example, a specific car with a specific inscription number. We also would like to explicitly give definitions of properties of abstract concepts. For example, we would like to say that a car has exactly 4 wheels. And we also want to be able to specify relations between concepts. For example, a car is a moving vehicle. Agents also want to see or want to know about the actions they can perform and how these actions affect the domain's objects. So in this lecture, we look, for example, also at description formalisms for action languages, such as PDDL and STRIPS, which are popular formalisms used in AI planning. Furthermore, agents need a lot of background knowledge about the physical laws that govern our world, temporal relationships between events, spatial or temporal relations between objects, and so on. The question is, how can we represent all these entities in a knowledge base in different representation formalisms? Apart from representing the knowledge, we also want to reason about this knowledge. How can agents exploit all the knowledge that they have in their knowledge base? We've seen some forms of reasoning already, and in this lecture we go again a little deeper and will understand some different types of reasoning that are useful for agents to reason, in particular about conceptual knowledge. So, for example, an agent wants to ask various questions about the objects and concepts in its knowledge base. So, for example, is a given object a moving vehicle? How many wheels would this particular object have? Which other cars does an agent know about? Or are there moving vehicles which are not cars? Slide 10 discusses categories and objects. So we have objects in our world, concrete objects, but we would like to also link them to categories to which these objects belong. This helps us to establish a common category system for very different applications. And such systems are in particular used on the web to also do reasoning about information that we have, for example, represented in web pages. We'll look at some practical examples in lecture 2. Of course, we have in our world a number of very general categories that everybody knows and needs to have represented as background knowledge. And the textbook introduces here the upper ontology, which is shown on slide 11. This is a general category hierarchy. So at the top of this hierarchy, we have anything that could exist in our world. And we can here distinguish, for example, between abstract objects such as sets, numbers, representational objects such as sentences and measurements. Among the measurements, we find times and weights. And sets actually lead to categories. And when we look at events, we have, for example, intervals, we have places, we have physical objects that are things. For example, we have animals and agents, and we can define humans as an intersection of animals and agents. We also have things such as liquids, gas, or solid objects. And we can also represent processes. The question how we can describe objects and relations between objects or the association of object to specific categories started very early on in artificial intelligence research. In particular, we were interested how we can describe more specialized things and how we can come up with explicit definitions or necessary conditions that actually allow us to define a concept in terms of an already known concept. For example, we could define a parent as a human who has at least one child. So given the concepts human and child, and a relationship that a human has at least one child, we can then introduce a new concept, parent. We also would like to be able to come up with some quite complex descriptions by chaining concept descriptions together. So similar to positional or predicate logic, where we can build more complex sentences from simpler sentences, we also would like to have a composition possibility for complex concept descriptions. For example, we could define something such as a proud grandmother is a human who is female with at least two children, who are parents and whose children are all computer science students. Slide 13 shows you an example of very early knowledge representation research, which dates back here to Marvin Minsky in 1974. And this piece of work was very, very influential. So Marvin Minsky introduced the idea of a frame as a data structure that represents a stereotyped situation. For example, being in a living room or going to a birthday party. And a frame would put several types of information together. So, for example, Minsky here looks at a frame representing knowledge about a cube. So we actually see that the cube has several sides. And he was also investigating what happens when an agent actually is moving in a world. So when the agent, for example, moves to the right, the side A will disappear from our view, whereas we will see a new side C. So this means we have to somehow be able to describe the different pieces an object is composed of, and then also be able to compute views of an agent on these object descriptions. And he was also concerned about updating the knowledge base depending on the actions of the agent. And we will look a little bit into this update or so-called revision problem in this lecture later. So apart from the idea of frames, knowledge representation is rooted in even earlier work. So for example, already in the beginning of 20th century, philosophers proposed notations to somehow describe elements of the world. Then in the mid-50s, the term semantic nets was coined, and it was used to represent knowledge that is needed to correctly translate natural language elements. And in the 60s, Killian presented a notation for representing conceptual information. And these semantic networks looked, for example, as shown on slide 15. So we see certain abstract concepts here. For example, persons are defined as a subset of mammals. We use different types of relations, such as, for example, a subset of relation and a member of relation. And we also have properties. For example, person have mothers, and mothers are female persons. Persons also usually have two legs. And we also see specific concepts here, namely Mary and John. And we also see a relation defined between Mary and John, which is called sister of. So these ideas were very powerful, but it also required to come up with a more formal description of this idea. So you see here that we have in the same network very different types of information. So we have abstract categories, we have subset relationships, we have concrete objects that are instances of abstract categories, and we have all kinds of relation defined between categories and instances of categories. So it was really necessary to clean this up, because in simple examples one could work with these semantic networks, but when creating larger semantic networks a lot of subtle semantic problems occurred. So this led to the field of description logics. that I summarize on slide 16. So over decades, people actually worked on the formalization of semantic networks, and they tried to capture these networks as fragments of first-order predicate logic. Because we've seen that predicate logic is undecidable, but of course when we want to reason about concepts and objects, we would like to have a reasoning procedure that actually returns an answer to us. So that's why we need to somehow limit the expressivity of these logics such that reasoning becomes decidable. When we, on the other hand, relate the so-called description logics to predicate logics, then defining the semantics of these logics is rather straightforward because it can then be taken from ordinary predicate logic. Alternatively, researchers also considered description logics as modal logics, and then they also extended predicate logics with other operators, for example, those to express modalities such as always or sometime. So in predicate logic, we can express something such as John is happy, but if we want to say something such as John is always happy or John is sometimes happy, then we need modal operators. So we will not look into modal logics in this lecture. So based on the formalization of semantic networks, an entire class or family of description logics has been developed, and the complexity of these logics has been studied. So very famous examples are KL1, Classic, ALC, or OWL. And we will look in this lecture at ALC and also at OWL to understand in more detail what these languages offer to represent information and how we can actually do reasoning in these languages. So when we speak of description logics, we mean various different things. So slide 17 summarizes some terminology. First of all, knowledge representation is a subfield of artificial intelligence, and description logics is a subfield of knowledge representation. Then we also use the term description logic to name the specific research field in knowledge representation research, or we also talk about a specific description logic X, which is part of the family of description logics as a specific type of knowledge representation languages. When we want to develop a solution for knowledge representation, then we need to work on several different questions. So first, we want to define a formalism. We need a well-defined syntax and a formal and unambiguous semantics. We also need some high-level description. We want to be able to relevant aspects that are necessary for an agent to perform certain reasoning tasks, but we also want to be able to abstract from other description details. To build good applications that allow agents to show some form of intelligence, we must be able to reason about this knowledge. And in particular, we will also need to be able to infer implicit knowledge from the explicitly represented knowledge in some knowledge base. An example of this was already discussed when we introduced propositional logic. We looked at the Wompus world. We had formalized explicit rules about this world in propositional logic. We also had some current observations that were made by the agent, and we wanted to, for example, infer that certain cells in this Wompus world cave are safe and the agent can safely move forward. Of course, we need to do or we want to have many more and different types of reasoning procedures, and this is the subject of this lecture. We also want to be able to have practical reasoning tools and efficient implementations such that the reasoning mechanisms that we develop can be effectively used by the agent. So let's look at an example for the syntax that we will define for description logics. So description logics introduce an explicit symbolic representation of knowledge. This is, for example, different as it is available in neural networks where the knowledge is implicit in the structure of the neural network and the trained weights. So we see here that we actually have a number of statements about persons in this slide 19. In the upper left of this box, you see some concept descriptions. For example, we define a woman as a person who is female and a man as a firm person who is not female. We define a mother as a woman who has at least one child, and persons as the sets of men and women. And we also state that the sets of male and female are disjoint. And you see here a certain similarity to the notation that you know from propositional and predicate logic. So instead of these more pointed and or symbols, we also use here and or symbols, but which more resemble set union and set intersection. So these are some general concept definitions. Then we also introduce statements about specific individuals. For example, we say that Stephen has a child Mark, Mark has a child Anna, John has a child Maria, and Anna has a child Jason. We state who are persons in this world. We say who is male and who is female. And of course, we can already imagine when we look at the concept descriptions that apparently some of these persons are men and women, and there are also mothers in among these individuals. So our question is now, how can we derive such implicit knowledge about concept and individual relationships in a systematic way? So before we can looking into this, of course, we want to give such syntactic expressions a declarative semantics. So as we already did it with predicate and propositional logic, we define a mapping of symbolic expressions to an interpretation. Slide 20 summarizes this. So we introduce a notion of truth, which allows us to determine whether the symbolic expression is true in the world under consideration. It is true when it has a satisfying interpretation, and we call this interpretation a model. So the syntax and semantics that we define for a certain knowledge representation language define the expressive power of this language. And we want to find here a good compromise. If our language is too limited and we do not have much expressive power, then we cannot represent all knowledge of interest. If our language is too expressive, then we will end up with reasoning procedures which will not work as we would like them to work. Slide 21 introduces forms of reasoning that we would like to see in this knowledge representation language. As the first example that we saw already introduced, we are in particular interested in deriving implicit knowledge from the explicitly represented knowledge. And these results or deductions should only depend on the semantics of the representation language, not on the syntactic representation. So therefore, we want that semantically equivalent knowledge must lead to the same result. So here's an example, and this time actually expressed in first-order predicate logic. So we have two variables. We state the term male, Y is male, if there is some individual Z. X has Z as a child and Z has Y as a child. And this is actually the definition for the grandson of X being Y. And now we have these statements about individuals. So John has child Mary, Mary has child Paul, and Paul is male. So the implicit knowledge in this knowledge base is that Paul is the grandson of John. Our calculus, again, on slide 22, should have certain properties. Of course, we need to have a sound reasoning procedure, and we want to have a decision procedure for the problems that we want to look at. It should be complete. So also the negative answers are correct, and it should definitely terminate. So in finite time, we would like to have an answer to our question. Furthermore, we would like to have our calculus to provide us with an efficient reasoning procedure, and it should be optimal with respect to the complexity of the problem and also practical. So if we want to equip agents in reality with these calculi, then it should also be easy to implement and maintain in practical applications. So the challenge when designing knowledge representation formalisms is now to balance expressivity and efficiency. So on the one hand, we want to have an expressive enough formalism, and on the other hand, we want to have an efficient reasoning procedure. From what we've learned in this lecture, we know already that satisfiability, for example, in first-order logic does not have a decision procedure. So this means that full first-order logic is thus not an appropriate knowledge representation formalism. We want to look for a decidable fragment of this logic. Furthermore, we know that satisfiability in propositional logic has a decision procedure, but the problem is NP-complete. On the other hand, we've also seen great progress in set solvers that actually behave very well in practice. However, we also know that the expressive power of propositional logic is not really sufficient to express the relevant knowledge in a convenient way. So this suggests to somehow find something in between. And this leads us to the description logic ALC that we discuss further in the next podcast. So with this, let me end this podcast.